Good evening, everybody. Hope you enjoy whatever is in front of you. Please take as much as you like. But Be'ezus Hashem, this will be our final shir on Tefillas Kelim, and this will be the final winter shir. And God willing, we hopefully will resume after Pesach. Haba alinu l'tova. Let's finish off Hilchos Tefillas Kelim. Tonight I want to talk about three things. One is very important, and the third is very important. The middle one is not as important. What's very, very, very important is what happens when you go to somebody's house and their kelim are not toveled. You go to an aunt or a cousin who's not religious, or even if they keep kosher or they don't keep kosher, regardless, but you just want a cup of Diet Coke in a glass. So can you have that cup of Coke? After all, no kashrus problem. Diet Coke is kosher. The glass is cold, so everything's good there. So can you deal with the problem of the fact that it hasn't been toveled, or you're assuming that it hasn't been toveled? So before we get into this, let me just tell you a cute story that when I spoke to Rav Schechter today to discuss the topic, he told me this following cute story. And we'll see where Moshe Feinstein holds. I think I might have mentioned it last week in passing. We'll mention it again. Moshe Feinstein was visiting a person's bungalow, and every year he would visit, I guess, a neighbor or somebody in the bungalow colony or the neighboring bungalow colony. And whenever he would visit this certain family, they'd offer him tea, and he always would tell them, "I'm used to having my tea in a mug." What's the significance of "I'm used to having my tea in a mug"? A mug is klicheres, it's ceramic. It's not required, it's not toten tevila, it's not required tevila. So therefore, Moshe, I guess, was nervous that this balabasta wasn't so careful. He didn't know, he was nervous. So to avoid the problem of using somebody's kli, which is not toveled, he would try to do it in a way that was hopefully... Unfortunately, she did realize why he did it, so that's why she told Rav Schechter the story, I guess. I think at the end of last week, we started this, but I didn't have a clear picture exactly of how to deal with it. So again, the halacha sounds from the Shulchan Aruch that even though it does not simply belong to you, even though the kli does not belong to you, even though you're just borrowing it, it still ought to require a tevila, and if you're using the cup of your host, the plate of your host, that presumably is borrowing their kli, and therefore it ought to need tevilas kelim. So, we mentioned last week that Rav Moshe Feinstein had a fascinating distinction between different kinds of utensils. He says that only utensil that you really need to eat the food is it a utensil that you're using. And therefore, a plate that has cake on it, what would happen if the plate wasn't there? There'd be cake on the tablecloth. So are you really using that plate? That plate isn't really helping you any. And therefore, that plate does not need tevila. You could use that plate to hold the cake. Even if it's a piece of chicken. Okay, it might make the table or the tablecloth a bit dirty, but you could still have chicken on the tablecloth. A step further, you could eat that chicken with your bare hands if you wanted to. So even the fork might be unnecessary. However, when we talk about soup, you can't have soup without a bowl. And therefore, the bowl is necessary. You are using the bowl. I'm not using a plate. I'm not even using a fork. But the bowl you're using, with a capital U, and therefore, since you're using it, you are using it, so you are obligated to be tovel, that bowl, or perhaps even that glass, with the Diet Coke in it, and therefore Moshe makes sense. The story and what he writes in Igros Moshe makes sense, that a cup or a glass that holds liquids would require tefillah because you are using it even though somebody else owns it. If you wouldn't have that glass there, you'd have Diet Coke all over your hands and not much in your mouth. That was Rav Moshe's distinction between different kinds of kelim. Rav Shlomo Zalman had a different distinction that he suggested, that if you're at a host's house and they hand you a plate of food, so you're not using that plate because they handed it to you. The only thing that you would be using is when you take something with a fork, knife, spoon, and you're taking the food to yourself, there you're using a kli because you're using the kli. When they hand it to you on a plate, they wanted to put it before you. But now you're taking it to yourself, that would be problematic. So, either way, both according to Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe, it comes out that the plate itself that's under a cake, for example, or a piece of chicken, is going to be okay according to both of them. Because according to Rav Moshe, you don't need the plate there. It could be on the table. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, they put it there for you. you didn't use it, so that the plate would be fine. There is, Rav Shechter mentioned to me that Rav Kook wrote that Tfilas Kalim, this is something that I had heard before, I didn't know where, and I thought Rav Soloveitchik had said it, but Rav Shechter said he wasn't familiar with Rav Soloveitchik ever saying this, so that's, I think, relatively valid, and fair to say that Rav Soloveitchik might not have said it if Rav Shechter wasn't familiar with it, because the fundamental idea, Rav Kook suggested that Tfila is not your problem. It's the problem of the owner. If the owner didn't do Tfilas Kalim, that's not your problem, that's his problem. And therefore, if you get something in a non-religious cousin or aunt's house, so that's their problem. They should have done Tfilas Kalim, but you have no problem to use it. The problem is, the Shulchan Aruch sounds not like that. As we mentioned earlier, that when you borrow, the Shulchan Aruch sounds like when you borrow something, it does require Tfilas Kalim, and you're using the host's cup or whatever else you're using, that's borrowing. So, perhaps you could be a little bit meika when it comes to like a glass kli, which is only midrabanan. And anyway, Rav Kook says, if you don't really own it, it's not your problem. So then, if you know you're going to cause somebody, you know, distress or embarrassment, and it's only glass, there might be room to be meika. But otherwise, one should try to avoid being, you know, if you could have the creativity that Rav Moshe had, saying that you're accustomed to drinking your tea in a mug, that would be ideal. Question. That's a good question. How do you make those distinctions? I wish he gave us more. Let me see if his language is any more indicative. He says, in a place where the food needs the kli, like marak and other liquids, moist foods, then you need tefilas kelim. Because the food that you're eating needs the container to hold it. So I guess you just have to... And I hear what you're saying about a knife. Okay, that's the first point. Done with that, yes. So let's talk about a fork. According to Shlomo Zalman, a fork would be a problem for you to use because you're using. They put a piece of something in front of you on a plate. So they did that. Now I take the fork and bring it to myself. So I'm using the fork. That's going to be aser. According to Moshe Feinstein, I don't need a fork. I could take it with my hands.
Right.
So Shlomo Zalman would end up being more machmir.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Okay. We could probably figure out a case the opposite way, though. That, for example, where Shlomo Zalman would be more makel. Okay, we'd have to think about the, you know, permutations. But okay, now let's talk about something that could happen, and when it happens, it's going to be too late, so you have to listen. When is that? You get a new pot for a new serving dish as a gift for your Shabbos guests, for the jelly beans, let's say. They come in 20 minutes before Shabbos, and they make sure to give you the candy dish, and you can see in their eyes that they expect it to be used, especially if they gave you jelly beans also. And jelly beans and a candy dish probably means you're supposed to serve them in this. And it's made out of glass, or metal. So what happens? Well, you don't have time to get it to the mikveh. Could you put a kli in the mikveh on Shabbos? So here, it's a good question. The Shulchan Aruch actually first says in Hilchos Shabbos that you can put something in the mikveh on Shabbos. But then it says, Yesh Ostrim. So we have a machlokes whether I could put something into the mikveh if I could be tovel kli on Shabbos. Now why could you, why can't you? What do you say? What malacha is it?
Nolad.
Nolad is not a malacha. Nolad is a subcategory of mukta. So nolad is not an action. Nolad is a state of being that an item is in. So we can't say you can't do X because of nolad.
Well, we did say that. No?
It can't be molad, you mean? Like by toothpaste?
Like we, I don't know, you can't say Truma Shabbos.
So is that because of nolad? I don't think it's because of nolad. But it is the same reason as that you can't take chum. It's called tikkun kli. Tikkun mana, fixing something, is probably a subcategory of makkah bepatish. The final touch that you put to something to make it available for use. So let's say you have food that's truma. So the final touch that you do to it is that hasn't had truma separated. You take away the truma, now it's available for your use. You have a kli. Kli is almost ready for use. It looks beautiful. It's painted, it's decorated, it's shaped, it's formed. There's just one thing missing, tefillah. So your tefillah's kelim is the last step to enable it to be used. So that's called tikkun kli or makkeh bepatish. And that, according to some opinions, you cannot do on Shabbos. So what do? You're not going to be able to serve these jelly beans? Someone's going to be not happy. Yeah? That's a very good question. It's a very smart question. It's so smart that I don't know the answer. But even they're not smart questions. They also don't know the answer to. Could you line something that needs tefillas kelim?
But not necessarily like an intense lining, not like a double wrapping.
Yeah, like a doily.
Like
a doily or a pretty napkin. I don't know the answer. It's a very good question. That's working with Ramosha's Saras, which you know. This is a more fundamental question. That was a more specific application. Much is a more specific application. I hear it's a good question. I'm not sure, Tamar. So let's see. Let's say, what are you going to do on Shabbos? So the Shulchan Aruch has a very creative solution. We know that who has to be tovel their kelim? A religion. Pick a religion. You have about three or four choices. A Jew has to be tovel his kelim. A non-Jew does not have to be tovel their kelim. So let's say I have a maid. We'll call her Maria for convenience, because most of our maids are named Maria. And I tell Maria, I'd like to give you a present. Now, I give her this candy dish. I don't care the jelly, but I give her the candy dish. So now who owns this candy dish? Maria owns it. Now I say, Maria, can I ask you a favor? I love that candy dish. I'd love to borrow it. Would you mind lending it to me? Sure, she says. So you borrow Maria's candy dish. Who owns it halachically, legally? She does it completely. You're borrowing a guy's candy dish. Do you have to be tovel a guy's candy dish? Absolutely not. What? You're out of candy dish. It depends on how well you know Maria and how much Maria needs you, I guess. That is what the Shulchan Aruch itself actually suggests. The Shulchan Aruch suggests playing this game. One question, how did you give it to Maria on Shabbos? Are you allowed to just give people presents on Shabbos?
Maybe it's the taking, not the giving, and she's not Jewish.
That's an excellent idea, but it's not correct. But the problem is giving gifts. You cannot give gifts on Shabbos. So how could this be a solution? So Mishnah Berurah says, like you were saying, or you were going to say, the Mishnah Berurah says even the afal gav de asur litein matana b'Shabbos, even though you're not permitted to give a gift on Shabbos, however litzorech Shabbos you are allowed. And here, where you're going to use it on Shabbos, it's certainly going to make your guest feel good about it on Shabbos, and you're going to use it for your jelly beans on Shabbos. It is permitted to give this gift. So that's the Shulchan Aruch's suggestion. Hold on, this suggestion is also important if you live in, for example, Kansas. Is there a river next to Kansas? Are there lakes near Kansas? No. So Kansas is a good example. Let's say you live in Kansas and you don't have, you know, you can't just FedEx your kli to the, you know, the mikvah somewhere else and have it FedEx back. You live in Kansas, you buy a kli, you can't be tovel it because you just don't have any means, you don't have a mikvah nearby. You don't have a lake in which to be tovel it. And by the way, not all rivers are good for tefillas kelim. So next time you're on a hike or a camping trip and there's a river or a stream, don't think, oh, it's a natural body of water, I could use it. It's not so simple. We're not going to get into the details now. But lakes, usually yes. Most lakes, yes, not all. Oceans, yes. Rivers, not necessarily. So you could ask the Shah if it happens. So you're in Kansas and you don't have a mikvah and you don't have any lakes nearby. So you could rely on this kula. Again, you give it to Bob, your next door neighbor friendly guy. Bob now owns your kli. Whatever your kli is, maybe it's your whole kitchen set. Maybe it's all of your pots and pans and dishes and silverware. Then you borrow them from him, and then you use them as borrowed from Bob until you get a chance to make it to the mikveh to be tovel them. Any questions about this solution? Yes.
Can you explain this to him? Because if you do, then he doesn't really own it.
Oh, he owns it 100%. In the same way, I don't want to compare it to chametz, but chametz, the guy owns 100,000%. No ifs, ands, or buts. He really owns it. He could eat it, he could do what he wants, he could sell it, he could be mekadesh a woman with it. Like, he owns it completely.
But in the back of his mind, though, there's like a stipulation that he's still not really his.
You could think whatever you want. You own it. It's. I understand what you're saying. Like, you know what I know. We both understand that in a few days I'm gonna, we'll do something else. But, legally that's how it works. Yeah.
You know that machshava influences halacha. Like, if you know where you can carry somebody
out, yes, that does not work in financial dealings. In financial dealings, if you think something, but it's not necessarily an obvious stipulation, and it's not articulated, so it doesn't matter what you think, because you had made a deal with me, unless you articulated it, or it was assumed between the both of us as something that's obvious, which is not necessarily the case here, then we will not listen to what you're thinking. Okay, yeah. Excellent question. Fabulous question. That goes back to, I think, one of the first shiurim that we have. What about giving gifts to non-Jews in general? And who could tell me an answer?
It's for your benefit.
It's for your own benefit. Right. Excellent. Yeah. Well, it's not yours. Why are you toveling it? Yeah, by that I mean, and get it back from him if you can convince him to give it back to you and then tovel it. Thank you. Right, you have to get it back first. It's not yours. Now, you're not supposed to play this game for long periods of time, or if you have other alternatives. For example, if you play the Shabbos game, once Shabbos is over, you're not supposed to rely on this anymore. You're supposed to say, okay, now can I please have, either you're not going to give it back to me, or give it back to me so I can take it to the mikvah on Sunday morning, because we don't like these games, but if you have to, it's available. Last question about this point? So you can't use, if you have something that is not, that needs tevila, then you're not allowed to use it without tevila. There's actually one other, let's assume that. That's what you should assume. Yes. No, what you're thinking of is disposable kelim, which we talked about last week, that Moshe Feinstein writes that something that is only usable once or twice or three times, that's not called a kli. That's not enough of a kli that the Torah was talking about that says you have to be tovel in the mikvah. But it doesn't mean that if I have a nice, strong, hard, crystal, whatever, that could be used once. It's not like one free shot. It doesn't work like that. That's only if it's not yours. It's somebody else's. So I don't own it. So as an owner, I'm not obligated to. But as a borrower, you're using it, aren't you? So then Ramosha said, but I'm not really using it because I could put them on the table. But wait, if you own it, then you have to be tovel it because you're the owner. So the only time we get into that idea of I'm not really using it, I could just sit on the table anyway, that's when you're not the owner. You're only using it. And then Rav Moshe Feinstein argued to us that you're not even using it. So you're not the owner, and you're not even using it because it could just sit on the table. So then, on both counts, you don't have to do the tefillah camp. But if you're the owner, then you don't have to come on to, are you using it, are you not using it? You're the owner. That obligates you. Why'd they give it to you? That's a fabulous question. It's a fabulous question. That goes into something very technical and not our sugya of how do you make halachic acquisitions. Believe it or not, halachically, you don't acquire something. You do not acquire something from another Jew with money. You acquire something from another Jew by lifting it up or bringing it to your home. I'm sorry?
When you get married, you
have money.
Women are objects.
Chas v'shalom. Yes, Kiddushin has its own parameters. Kiddushin has its own parameters, and utensils have different parameters. They're very different creatures. I've been married for 8 years. Tomorrow is my 8th anniversary. You could all wish me a happy anniversary. And even though I don't think you need 8 years to figure it out, but women are much more special than any Kli in the world. Okay, you could all report back. Yes. Oh, you're saying, let's say you go to Onat and they have this beautiful glass, real glass, let's say, or metal container, and in it already has the chocolates. You want to buy that, and once you buy it by default, you're already using it. That's a great question. So if you go to the Frumi stores, then they probably do it for you. If you're buying from not a Frumi store, like out of town, where they just don't, you know, realize these kinds of things. No offense to anyone from out of town, of course. I don't know the answer. Right, if you give it to somebody, I don't know, it's a great question, it's time to really think about. Yeah?
So if you want to do the sketchy, I'll have my neighbor Hetzi own it, and then I don't really have to...
No, you'll have your neighbor completely own it.
Okay, but...
You give it to them, it's theirs. They could do what they want with it.
So you can't give
it... If they die, their child inherits it. It's really theirs.
So they can't give you a quarter for the chapter, maybe give it to them, it has to be...
No, you could sell it to them. But why... What? Okay, so don't worry about that. We can talk about that after. That's the side point. Don't worry about that now. Okay, let's now talk about the main topic for tonight, which is what we started this whole series to actually reach. That was because of one of our dear members' questions. What about George Foreman grills? What about electric appliances? So we, let's see if I could do this within our time period. There's a lot to talk about, and we'll talk about a few steps, one building on another, and I hope I'll be able to give you an answer. If I just try to skirt around the issue, you could just try to push me until I actually give a definitive answer. I might not. But if it doesn't seem clear to you, then push me until I give you something that is either yes, no, maybe. Okay, let's start with this. Let's assume that I have an electric appliance, a hand blender, a toaster oven, a toaster, you know those old toasters that you press down and the bread or bagel goes down and boop, pops up half a minute later, or other metal electric utensils, George Foreman grill, or what? Sandwich maker, panini maker, what else? Anything else? Hot water urn, thank you, yeah, hot water urn. So all those things, let's assume that if you put it in water, if you immerse it in the water, by the way, did I tell you the story about my hot water urn? Okay, I'll tell you the story about my hot water urn. Who here knows the Buzz in Brooklyn? Okay, the Buzz is a very special store in Brooklyn that, let's call it a Hamish store. I'm gonna see what I mean in a moment. I went to buy a hot water urn, a pump pot for Shabbos. So where do you go if not the Buzz? So we went to the Buzz. And they actually only had one version of the pump pot, two colors, but one pump pot version, maybe a bigger and a smaller. And on the outside of the box, there was a Hechsher. I said, how fascinating. What are Hebrew letters doing on the outside of a pump pot box? I looked closely, and the Hechsher says, this pump pot was manufactured by a company that's owned by a Jew. Do not immerse in liquid. If you immerse in liquid, you thereby void the warranty. So A, they're protecting themselves. B, I didn't have to be tovelet. I didn't even have to enter a question of buying a thing that was manufactured by a guy, a clear that was manufactured by a guy, and now having to get into the question, should I be tovelet, should I not be tovelet? Okay, that's just an aside introductory story. Let's assume, for argument's sake, which is not true, but let's assume just for argument's sake, but I have a Kli, I have a sandwich maker, and if you put a sandwich maker in water, it's going to break. So now what my question is, so if it's going to break if I do it, so therefore I don't have to be tovelet at all, or therefore, it's metal, I'm using it with food, so the Torah says I have to be tovelet, it's going to break if I do, so I shouldn't use a sandwich maker. You can go in two ways. Either since it doesn't work, so... Okay, so don't use a sandwich maker. Or, well, the Torah would never tell me that he told us something if anyway it's going to break. So, and this is going to be an important point, even if this is going to be important. But in Eretz Yisrael, there's a very great, among the greatest of our Talmidei Chachamim, Reb Shmuel Vosner in Bnei Brak. He wrote 10, 12, 14 volume Shas Tshuva, the Shevet HaLevi, fabulous masmid. I remember when there was a Shiloh that I heard. I once heard Reb Shlomo Amar speaking about some cutting edge halachic Shiloh, like brain death or one of those kind of things. Shlomo Amar is the chief Sephardic rabbi. And I remember in the context of his speaking, he said, well, no, I just, you know, he wanted to ask it to who he felt would be, you know, I guess he probably spoke to Reb Avadia, and he spoke to Shlomo Vosner. Again, one of the great, you know, top five probably in the world. Maybe top 10, but definitely in the, you know, up there. So Vosner says, very simply, if there is something that needs tefillah and it might break, so don't use it. There's no heter to not be tovah something because you worry that it's going to get ruined. If it's going to get ruined, so don't buy it, don't use it. But just, I'm saying we have a mitzvah d'oraisa here, right? We learned the first shiur to mitzvah d'oraisa to be tovah your kelim. And where does it say that, oh, but if it's not going to work, then you don't have to. The Torah says metal things that touch food need to be less kelim. If not, then the chiyuv d'oraisa of you to do it. What right do you have to use something if it's not toveled? It's going to break? Okay, so don't use it. Not therefore don't be tovel it. That's what Vosner writes. Shechter, with whom I confirmed today, it doesn't hold like that. He says, what do you mean? The Torah is assuming that if you're going to use a kli, you have to be tovel it. But if the tefillah itself will break it, so how could the Torah obligate you to prepare a kli for yourself if you're not even going to be able to use the kli in the first place? So Shechter assumes, and this is a fundamental point, that if something is going to break, again, let's assume it will, we know it will break. Let's assume we know it will break. Then if Shechter holds, you don't have to be tovel it at all. The problem is we don't really know that something is going to break. And Reb Shechter in the conversation said a very interesting, pointed out something very interesting to me. He said that there are different kinds of electrical components inside of electrical appliances. There are one set is heating elements. Another set is a motor. For example, a toaster oven, a grill, panini maker, sandwich maker, George Foreman, those have heating elements. There's no motor. As opposed to a blender, a hand blender, that has a motor. So Reb Shechter says that from what he understood, motors get ruined by water. Heating elements don't get ruined by water per se. You have to let them dry out for 3 days, 4 days, 5 days a week. So again, I didn't do the experimentation, and if any of you want to lend me your hand blenders to experiment, I'm happy to borrow them. So at least according to that just technical observation, if there's a hand blender, then we have to what to worry about. If it's a question of something that just has a heating element like a George Foreman and a toaster, a toaster doesn't really need tefillah, because a toaster oven doesn't, because you just have the grills that touch the bread or the grilled cheese. But if you have the old toasters that you sort of fit the slices in and you press down and it pops up, that you theoretically should have to be tovel, except there's a heating element, let it dry out for a week, a good week. That will probably, again, no guarantees, solve the problem. That's introduction number one. Introduction number two. Let's talk about, somebody actually called me up yesterday and asked me the following. They bought a blender, a hand blender, plastic on top, metal blade, and they make a trip to the mikvah on Tuesday, it's tomorrow, so do they have to be tovel that, or how do they tovel that? I said, thank you for asking me the question yesterday, Sunday. Could you please do me a favor and call me back Monday night after 10 o'clock? By then I should have a clarity. In your sake, I did get a clarity, I discussed with the chef as well. Can you immerse part of a kli in the water? Meaning, the top half is plastic. The bottom half is the metal part. That's what you need. So can I just leave out the plastic and just put in the metal? So on one hand you say, of course, the metal is the only thing that needs tefillah. Plastic doesn't need tefillah. We know that from the pasuk itself. The pasuk says, the list of six metals that need tefillah is kelim, and plastic ain't there. So on the other hand, a kli is defined as a kli. And let's say, for example, you have a big frying pan. It has a long handle. Do I have to just dip the frying part into the mikveh, or does the handle have to go in the mikveh as well? It is clear in the Shulchan Aruch, and there's no discussion about it, no question otherwise, that the handle has to be immersed also. Not only does the handle have to go in, but it has to go in simultaneously. You can't dip half now and half, you know, stick this part in and then stick the other side in. That doesn't work. You have to stick the whole kli in simultaneously. Oh, what do you mean? But that's not touching food. Doesn't matter. It's one kli. If that argument is correct, then maybe we could look at our hand blender. Yes, the metal is on the bottom, but it's one big kli called a hand blender. How can you just divide and conquer? Well, Rav Moshe Feinstein was able to divide and conquer. Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests that if you have a kli that has two rolls, one is a motor roll and the other is the cutter roll. So you have a blender. The top part is, you know, that is probably in a plastic casing that's probably going to be in your grip, or right below your hand grip. And then 4 inches below that, you'll have that metal spinning blade. So the two different parts to a kli and two different rolls almost. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tremendous kula and a chiddush that I don't think everybody necessarily holds, but you can certainly rely on it, that you could dip half the kli, the half the kli that has the metal in it. If you dip that, that will be enough to take care of the tefillah need for this item. So therefore, halach l'maisa, I told this fellow who asked me the question that you could take, based on this tshuva Rav Moshe, you could take your hand blender, stick it in, but not just the middle blade. Stick it in, as Rav Shechter suggested to me, all the way, as far as you can go, until the motor. Because that's the part that could get ruined. So Rav Shechter, of course, holds that anything that gets ruined doesn't need to be toveled. And he putting this Rav Moshe to join that first svara, that you could do half a kli, so immerse half the kli until the part that will get ruined by the water. Yes? Correct. If you could detach the blade, then just detach the blade and life is easy. For example, the new George Foreman's, I don't have them, but I was informed as such, the new George Foreman grills, the tray comes off for easier cleaning, then you don't have to get into this whole shiloh, but those of you who have the old George Foreman's don't have it so easy, and especially don't have it so easy, because the George Foreman is not, if you open it up flat, it's not a flat surface, it's an obtuse angle, obtuse, right? What?
Obtuse would be the other side of it. It's a cube.
No, it's not a cube.
Oh, it's obtuse, you're right.
Obtuse, thank you, yeah. So it's an obtuse angle. It's sort of like this. So any way you do it, you're not going to be able to, like if you dip in one side, so the other side is going to be out. If you dip in the other side and this side is going to be out, you're not going to be able to configure any way to dip it, just the plate, into the water without getting the casing, which houses the electrical components, into the water, so this solution doesn't help us being able to tovel part of a kli. So we have to start talking about some ways to solve this problem. Again, so far we said that if something will definitely break, do you have to tovel it? That's a machlokas. Rav Shechter says you don't have to, Rav Vazna says you do have to. I think it's logic. I think both of them are coming from logic, you know, from their own logic. I think both of them are coming from there.
What do you mean you have to tell it, you know, it's going to break? There needs to be a fish.
I'm sorry? If you have three friends who all bought this and tried to put it in the mikvah and they all tell you it broke afterwards, I think you could assume that it's going to break. And therefore, Shat would say, what? Rav Ozner would say that if you know that this is something that breaks when you put it into the water, so you're not going to be able to put it into the water, so don't use it. Rav Shechter says, well, if it breaks by putting it in the water, so you don't have to put it in the water in the first place.
But what is the mitzvah?
The mitzvah doesn't apply in such a case.
But
it's still a kli. The kli is a kli, but this is not the kind of kli. A Torah wouldn't obligate us to put into water something that will be broken if it puts into the water. It can't be. It's like a circuitous. What's the word?
Circuitous.
Yeah. The Torah tells you to. Yeah, you can hear both sides.
Right. Like,
yeah, both make sense. I'm not one to pass in between them.
Right.
Okay. So let's say you have an old George Foreman grill, and you're not going to be able to immerse half, which would be an ideal. So I want to know, Rabbi, do I have to immerse? Do I have to put it in the mikvah or not? So if you want to, you know, take the frummy route, which will be, well, try it. put it in. If it, let it dry out for a good week, and if it works, then great, you're mekayem your mitzvah. And if it breaks, okay, so you lost $35. That's fine. Let's say you're not ready to take the gamble. So, again, coming back to the main question, how could I be tovel a kli that, let's say, does need tefillas kelim, or let's assume like the shevet halevi that even if it will break, I still need to put it in. So I have to put it in the mikveh. So how can I put it in the mikveh if it's going to get ruined? So listen to a very interesting halacha that the modern day, this our generation suggested. What kind of kli do you have to put in the mikveh? A kli that was manufactured by a guy. So I have a very good idea. Go down to your basement or ask your super to borrow a screwdriver. Take the screwdriver, find some screws on the bottom of your kli, on this electrical appliance. Unscrew it. Now, is it a usable kli? No. Now, guess who's going to assemble this kli? You. Take the screwdriver and turn the other way now. And all of a sudden, you have a kli manufactured by you. And Hilchos Shabbos, but here you're the one who made the kli, and therefore a Jew made the kli, and a Jew doesn't have to be told the Jew that a kli that was made by a Jew. Now here there's a little bit of a discussion how much do you have to break it to make it that you really made it? Just like unscrew something, like make something loose and tighten it? No. You have to make it that it's unusable, and after you make it unusable, you have to make it usable. That is one suggestion if you do find yourself in a scenario where, again, you have, let's say, the old George Foreman and you want to put it in the mikveh, but here, if you could disassemble it and reassemble it yourself, that might be a way for you to not have to put it in the mikveh. Now let me share with you a fascinating, I think it's actually very cute, and when I say cute, I mean like everybody else rejects it. Listen to this. It's two stretches of the imagination. You'll see what they are. There's a halacha. Let's not talk about tefillas kelim. Let's talk about tumah v'tahara. So, what happens if a dead body touches my watch? My watch becomes tameh. What happens if a dead body touches my hand? I become tameh. What happens if a dead body touches my jacket? My jacket becomes tameh. What happens if a dead body touches my house? Nothing. Why? Because we learned that from Pesukim that anything that is ground or attached to the ground cannot become tameh. Okay? That's not subject to dispute. There's no argument about that. That's an explicit Gemara based on a Pasuk. Now, let's get to the Chiddush. That's a question about tumah. Tumah, tara, dead bodies, you know, shratzim, little insect, creepy crawlies. Maybe, if we look at the Pesukim carefully by Tevilas Kelim, we'll find an interesting word there. Now, Tevilas Kelim, of course, has nothing to do with Tumah or Tara. But the Pasuk says, Kol Asher Yavo Ba'esh Tavir Ba'esh, and then it says, Vitaher. The word Vitaher, and you shall purify it, is the source for doing Tevilas Kelim, we learned 2 weeks ago, or two sessions ago. So that word vitaher sounds like it sounds like the pasuk is referencing the idea of tumah v'tahara. So maybe suggests one of the later poskim, the Chelkas Yaakov, the Shavus Yaakov, just like by tumah v'tahara, if something's attached to the ground, so too for tefillas kelim, anything that's attached to the ground doesn't need tefillas kelim. So therefore, if you work in this gigantic commercial kitchen and they bring in this pot that is installed into your kitchen, the pot is installed in the kitchen. Or even maybe there's a kitchen a freezer, or a kitchen, or a gigantic refrigerator, like those rooms, those freezer or refrigerator rooms, and the racks that you, let's say, put food directly on is built into the wall. It's not just that they're adjustable racks, so you fit it into any slot, any height that you want. They're built into the wall of this freezer or refrigerator room. That's attached to the ground. You don't have to be tovel that. Okay, that's the first point. Now the next point. This point was suggested by Rav Yaakov Breisch. Rav Yaakov Breisch, the Chelkas Yaakov, he died about, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. He lived in Switzerland, I believe, in Basel, Switzerland. A great Talmud Chacham. And he suggests that every appliance that you use only works when it's plugged into the wall. That means its workability is only when it's attached to ground. So therefore, if we put all this together, if we assume that anything that's attached to the ground, just like it doesn't get tumah, doesn't contract tumah, so too somebody suggested that it shouldn't require tefillah's kippah. And then we could say an added component, an added chiddush, that anything that you plug into the wall is considered attached to the ground also. I don't care if it's vertical, you know, the wall or the floor. The point is it's attached to a building or to you know, Mother Earth or anything that's attached to Mother Earth. So, according to this incredible chiddush and incredible kula that Rav Yaakov Breisch, the Chelkas Yaakov, suggests, appliances that are plug-in appliances don't need tefillas kelim. Period. Why? Because they plug in. They plug in, that means they're attached to the wall, attached to the ground. Anything that's attached to the ground, just like it doesn't contract tumah, so too it does not require tefillas kelim. That's very creative, very useful, very innovative, and very questionable. I'll just share a few very choice words that some of the poskim say. The Shevet HaLevi, that's Rav Ozner, who I, from Bnei Brak, I mentioned earlier in this year, I just highlighted in my notes four words. Ze hevel or us ruach. In English, I think the word stupidity would be an appropriate synonym. Foolishness might be a little gentler, but it's not this concept that's fabulous and creative and convenient as it is not so accepted by the poskim. So let's try to keep on looking for some other solutions, and then we'll try to put something together in about 4 or 5 minutes. 3 minutes maybe. One solution that has been suggested, and I don't see any problem with it per se, except to, unless you just can't make it happen. Let me give you a scenario, and then we'll talk about appliances. Let's say there's a person who's scared to swim. There are people who are scared to swim. But it's not just a five-year-old. It's a woman, an older woman, is scared of the water, scared to swim, and she's scared to go to the mikvah. So how will such a woman go to the mikvah if she's an Ita? So the Shulchan Aruch says that you could have the following. People could hold her arms and walk in with her. But wait a second. What is there going to be? There's going to be a chatzitza between her arm and the water should be touching her arm directly. How could people hold her arm and grip her if there will be no water getting to that part of her arm? So Shulchan Aruch says the following. There's something called hashaka. Hashaka is a concept in Hilchos Mikvaos called, translated as kissing. He, shin, kuf, he, kissing. Waters that kiss mikvah water become mikvah water. So if you have, you take your hand, you wet it in the mikvah. You hold this woman's arm as she walks in. Now, the water underneath your hand is not mikvah water. But if you hold her hand not too tightly, it could sort of touch or intermingle with the mikvah water as she goes into the mikvah. And therefore, the water under your hand is going to kiss, as it were, mikvah water, and therefore become kosher mikvah water. And that's how a person who's scared to go into the water could go to the mikvah. While her arms are being gripped, being held, not too tightly, because if it's too tightly, then the waters from the mikvah can't kiss the water underneath my hand. But if it's loose, not loose, benoni, the person said, a medium hold, then the water underneath my fingers, again, I had to wet my fingers beforehand, and the waters of the mikvah will touch each other and turn all the water into mikvah water, even what was underneath my hand and originally not mikvah water, and that woman will be surrounded by mikvah water and it will be a good tefillah. Let's take that Shulchan Aruch and apply it to us. I have an appliance, and there's a certain part of the appliance where the water, where the electricity, where the water will seep into the electrical circuitry. Let's say again, some components, some appliances, you don't have a specific area or a hole that the water is going to come into. But let's say there's an urn, and there's like a little area, a little crack or a hole where the heating elements inside will be touched by the water. So I could do what? I could take, using the same logic, I could take my hand, stick it in the mikvah, make my hand moist, stick my finger into that hole, or put my hands around that part, that, let's say, the seam or that crack in the appliance, cover it over, not too tightly, not too loosely, so water is not going to go in. But it's what I want. I don't want water to go in. Holding the kli like this, put it carefully into the mikvah, and again, water is not going to come in, but at the same time, halakhically, that part of the kli did get into the mikvah. Why? Because the moisture, the wetness that was under my, that was on my fingers, since I wasn't holding too tight, was able to kiss the mikvah water that surrounds my fingers. And now, the mikvah waters touch the water underneath my fingers, and it's considered that that part of the kli did get into the mikvah with the rest of the kli. And that could be a way, again, if you have such a kli, that there's one place that you could isolate where the water is going to enter, or there's one crack, one hole. You could, again, moisten your fingers, stick your fingers in to that hole, or seal that crack with your fingers as long as it has been moist already, and then the moisture underneath your fingers will touch the mikvah water, and you will have your cake and eat it too. You put it in the mikvah, but water didn't get into the circuitry, the electrical or heating element area. That is a solution that I don't see any problem with. Again, it only is going to work if you have such a, you have to look at your urn. For, it might work for an urn, but not a George Foreman. It might work for a George Foreman, but not a blender. You have to look at whatever the clue that you have to see if this will help you. Yes? Yeah. It's not enough to have a Jew involved in the manufacturing process. It has to be a company owned, the corporation owned by a Jew. So, for example, if you had a Jew, or if you had a Jew on the assembly line, that's not going to make it okay. You need the Jew to own the company. There are Jews who own companies, but I think we follow Rove. Even in America, where there are plenty of Jewish companies, which still probably follow Rove. Look, if you get something from that was made in Israel, then you could probably follow Rove and assume that it was made by a Jew. There are Arab and Christian, you know, pot makers, but the Rove would tell you that was made by a Jew. You probably don't have to be tovalent. Okay, let's try to sum up. Yeah, question about this point?
Well, just more of a technical question about, like, ownership of the company. You're not basing on a CEO, you're basing on, like, the shareholders?
So corporations are a little bit, that's certainly not the topic of this year. We could give other shiur about how to define, halakhically define corporations. But no, it's not the CEO, it's the shareholders, but corporations might be a totally different animal.
So even if, so then you wouldn't really be able, it's not clear as to if it's really owned by a Jew or not.
It's fair to assume that the majority of American corporations have majority shareholders who are non-Jewish.
Right.
So either way, in America, assume that you have to do to scale it. Okay, so let's try to get more halakha l'maaseh right now, and then we'll finish up with this. So, I have my George Foreman grill. What should I do? Maybe I could, if I just go, let's say it's gonna definitely break. So Shatza says I don't have to put it in the mikveh at all. Right? If Avazah says you have to, or don't use it. Shatza says you don't have to put it in the mikveh in the first place because it's gonna break. But I don't know if it's gonna break. I'd probably be a little nervous. I mean, if you think there's a good chance it might break, also you might not have to. I'm not sure it's going to break if you let it dry for a good week. Again, not just for 24 hours, but for like a good week. Let it dry out. The air that will just take all the stuff inside and dry everything out, it'll be fine. It could break. So if it was me, I'd probably say let's tovel it. Let it dry for a week. I'm a little nervous to do that. I don't want to play games. I can't just throw away $35 so easily. So then, and this, we could start putting together different points that I said earlier today. We could rely, let's say, Rav Shechter does say that if it breaks, you don't have to be tovel in the first place. Maybe I could also disassemble it and put it back together. So those people who say that works, I could accomplish, I could be, you know, fulfill the tefillah, not having to be tovel it because a Jew made it. So if people who say just disassemble it, I could do that. And then I could also add to get to that the chiddush that we talked about plugging in the Chelkas Yaakov's chiddush, that anything plugged in to the wall, even though some people have very fine words to say about that, but somebody did say it. So if I start putting together all these different, it's sort of like, did you ever sort of make a kugel and it's not in the pie crust, and like the filling isn't enough to fill the pie crust. You have to sort of find something. What could, maybe if I throw in another egg, or like an extra 2 tablespoons of sugar, or like a little flour, something to like build it. What can I do to, maybe some more, some soy milk or something, to like just make it get bigger so it'll fit in better. So that's what a lot of times what we do in halacha. We try to say, I'm scared to not tovel it, because, you know, it might need to feel d'oraisa, but I'm scared to tovel it. So maybe if we put together enough things, we could build a strong enough case to actually feel confident enough that we don't have to be tovel it. So what I heard from Rabbi Neuberg, which I think is a very much middle-of-the-road position, I think others say, you know, hey, put it in the water and let it, you know, let it dry. Rabbi Neuberger's position was sort of, let's try to put together all these things. Again, I'll take it apart and I'll put it back together. I'll unscrew a little bit and put it in, so that it can't be used, and then I'll re-screw it in. Then I will also assume the possibility that if it's going to break, Rosh Hashanah says I don't have to be tovel in the first place. Then I will also have the possibility that anything that's plugged in doesn't need to be tovel at all. And I think there's a fourth thing that I think he said. I shouldn't forget that fourth thing. There's the fourth thing that he said. 1 second. Rosh Shechter. You could disassemble it. No. Oh yeah, that might have been it. Maybe you could give it to a non-Jew also. Yeah, you could give it to a non-Jew and solve that problem. So if you have a grill, what? Right, but in this sort of situation, we're sort of just sort of piling together different kulas to get out of Tfilas Kalim. So if you do like a bunch of things that on their own, none of them are really satisfactory. But if you do them all together, that will create a cogent enough argument. It's sort of like if you're a lawyer and you're litigating in court, and you don't have one point that's going to win the case. So you have like 7 different little points. If you put the whole thing together, then, again, none of them on their own is enough proof to prove whatever you want to prove. But enough little things that all together it's a cogent argument. That's what we do often in halacha. So here, again, I would suggest it might be worthwhile to, again, if there's a motor, or try to send motors break more than heating elements. So a motor, let's be more makel. But a heating element, maybe it's worthwhile to put in the mikveh and wait a good week and hopefully you'll be okay. No promises, but no promises. But if you don't want to go that route, then perhaps based on Neuberger's sort of compromised position, we could put together all these coolers. Again, rely on the fact that if it's the kind of thing that will break, it doesn't need to be in the first place, and give it ownership to a guy, at least legally, and even though you're using it. Again, on its own, we never rely on that full time. But in this circumstance, we're just sort of adding different coolers together. Then the fact that it plugs in is another thing that we can rely on. And finally, the fact that you're going to disassemble it and then reassemble it yourself. If you put all those together, then perhaps you might not have to be tovel it at all. That is the final conclusion that we will have, but I do suggest that if you do have a specific question, you call up your local Orthodox rabbi, discuss it with him, because as you could see, in this specific area, there are a lot of areas where there could be machlokas, a lot of, you know, a rav could take one position or a different position, and whoever you usually follow for psak, and wherever you are when you buy your grill or your sandwich maker or your hot water urn, unless you go to the buzz, then you solve all the problems. Okay, Bezat Hashem will resume after Pesach, and have a wonderful next few weeks. God willing, Shabbos HaGadol, I didn't look at the calendar yet, but I'm assuming Shabbos HaGadol, Mincha time, there will be a Shabbos HaGadol, Drasha, some topic that will be discussed here. I don't know what the topic is yet, but I guess you'll be informed via email when that topic does come up. Thank you so much.